Today, keep pedaling. The Property Imperative Daily for the 18th of March 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Given the current market durations, we're going to examine the latest critical data each day because a week is a long time in politics, but a lifetime on the markets at the moment. So let's start with the day's most remarkable market event, which was a rise of 34 basis points in the 10-year US Treasury yield, probably the world's most important financial benchmark. That was its biggest daily move since the summer of 1987, when the yield started as high as 8%, Bloomberg said. This was a historic move out of bonds, and by taking yields so low, the bond market was effectively inviting the federal government to borrow like there was no tomorrow. That is what the government is now girding to do, and the huge extra supply of bonds is bound to put up a pressure on yields. In fact, there are rumours that big hedge funds have been forced to sell treasuries. Bridgewater Associates, for example, has admitted a 20% loss, and many others may follow similar strategies. Also, that sovereign wealth funds are selling bonds to meet demands for cash from governments in the wake of the oil price decline, or China is selling some of its hoard of bonds, either because it needs to or because it has a plot to crash the American economy. But the main reason for the rebound, really, is the news. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve said it was reactivating a 2008-era program to support commercial paper issued by companies, essentially to ensure that scarcity of short-term funding doesn't force some large companies to fail to meet their payroll and so take the crisis to another level. Treasury bonds have just reversed their recent trend, and meanwhile, the dollar has also reversed, staging what it might be called a V-shaped recovery. Its sharp decline started at the same time as the dive in stock markets, but it has since rallied as stocks have kept falling. Indeed, its shape for the year is more like an N. Two of the dollar index's biggest three daily moves for the last 8 years have happened in the last week. Stocks rebounded unsurprisingly after Monday's fall, but high-yield bonds barely improved, while banks, which have been sold off massively, did no more than rise with the market. Far more is still needed to be done to alleviate the pressure on credit. In addition, as much as $1 trillion could be pumped into the economy, US Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said overnight, this could include direct payments to Americans. Americans need cash now, and the president wants to give cash now. And I mean now, in the next 2 weeks, he said on Tuesday at a White House briefing alongside President Trump. His proposals include $300 billion for small business loans, $200 billion in stabilization funds, $250 billion in cash payments, and a possible second round of checks, including tax deferrals, that would bring the cost of the plan to around $1.2 trillion. It's a big number, he told reporters later on Capitol Hill. This is a very big situation in this economy. We put a proposal on the table that would inject $1 trillion into the economy. And he warned that the virus could send US unemployment up to 20% without government intervention. And by the way, oil fluctuated after slipping to the lowest since 2003. Now, it wasn't clear whether the Senate would attempt to add these additional provisions to the legislation that's already up there for signing off, or whether there will be a separate bill. And in a further move to relieve financial stress on average Americans, he also said that individual taxpayers can get a deadline extension on paying taxes of up to $1 million, and corporations can defer tax payments of up to $10 million, and the deferments can total as much as $300 billion, up from $200 billion he proposed last week. And the 90-day delay gives taxpayers additional time to pay their outstanding tax liabilities without interest or penalties. And the White House is encouraging taxpayers to still file by April the 15th if they don't owe the IRS any money. And overnight, the tech-heavy Nasdaq Composite led gains and closed up 6.23%. The Dow 30 rose 5.2%, and the S&P gained 5.39%. This is a little bit unlike anything else we've had before because of the unknown length and unknown implications of the virus, TD Ameritrade said. We will continue to see these crazy swings. And Deutsche Bank's global co-head of capital markets said it's pretty clear that there is potentially more downside to come. This has much further to run, and we're only at the beginning of social isolation in Europe and in the US, and the effects on the real economy are still to be felt. But already global equities are more than 25% off their highs. And in Germany, Angela Merkel said that it would not rule out joint European Union debt issuance to help contain the impact. And yet more companies are scrambling for cash, with Kraft, Heinz, Caesars and MGM drawing down credit lines. Meanwhile, more on that Federal Reserve Reintroduced Commercial Paper Purchasing Facility, or the CPPF, which was last seen in 2008. Damien Bowie wrote, overnight, central bankers pulled out some more desperate measures to try to save the financial system from illiquidity. In particular, the Fed relaunched its commercial paper purchasing facility, the CPPF, from the global financial crisis days. Essentially, the Fed stands ready to repurchase high-quality commercial paper in secondary markets from non-financial participants in exchange for emergency liquidity. It will do this indirectly through a special-purpose investment vehicle, partially backed by the US Treasury. Also, it will lend at 200 basis points over the overnight index swap rate, well above the 100 basis point charged during the GFC. But considering that the Fed has just dropped the Fed funds rate by 100 basis points, all that is doing is charging the rate from a week ago. The CPPF helps to reduce refinancing risk for corporates because non-financial entities that would otherwise lend to corporates now have become liquefied by the Fed and are not frozen. And this plumbing fix matters because the system needs ample time and liquidity to be able to contend with the virus shock without a surge in bad debts and foreclosures. However, the CPPF does not constitute the Fed lending directly to corporates and bypassing the banks. The banks are still the primary intermediaries for financing the economy, and the Fed is actively encouraging them to lend in difficult times. And Credit Suisse said it does not relieve any binding constraints on money funds at the epicenter of the crisis, nor does it actually constitute direct financing of corporates by the central bank. Therefore, it is an indirect support for distressed corporates during the shutdown period at best. And interestingly, the Bank of Japan has already gone there recently by setting up a direct corporate lending facility in its recent easing package. But the Fed requires a constitutional change before it can purchase or directly finance corporate assets. And Credit Suisse are also disappointed that the Fed has not yet established foreign exchange swap lines with non-G5 central banks, currently the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, the SNB and the BOC, are able to lend US dollars to those needing them in their jurisdictions via a line of US dollar credit with the Fed. But given the breadth of the virus crisis, other central banks need to be included in this privilege, especially those in Asia. And stock markets continue to seesaw, but they may find some support from fiscal stimulus being deployed by central banks, or they may not. And of course, the UK also announced further stimulus to directly help businesses and households worth around 15% of GDP. And the Bank of England said, although the magnitude of the economic shock from the virus is highly uncertain, activity is likely to weaken materially in the UK over the coming months. Temporarily, but significant disruptions to supply chains and weaker activity could challenge cash flows and increase demand for working capital from companies. In response, the bank will provide funding to businesses by purchasing commercial paper of up to 1 year maturity issued by firms making a material contribution to the UK economy, the CCFF, it's called. It will help businesses across a range of sectors to pay wages and suppliers, even while experiencing severe disruption to cash flows. The facility will offer financing on terms comparable to those prevailing in markets in the period before the virus economic shock and will be open to firms that can demonstrate that they were in sound financial health prior to the shock. The facility will look through any temporary impacts on the firm's balance sheets and cash flows by basing eligibility on the firm's credit ratings prior to the virus shock. Businesses do not need to have previously issued commercial paper in order to participate. And the scheme will operate for at least 12 months and for as long as steps are needed to relieve cash flow pressures on firms that make a material contribution to the UK economy, the bank said. And the bank will publish further details of the operation of the CCFF in a market notice on Wednesday the 18th of March. And the bank will implement the facility on behalf of the Treasury and will put it in place as soon as possible. By providing alternative source of finance for a wide range of companies, the scheme will help to preserve the capacity of the banking system to lend to other companies, including small and medium-sized enterprises, which rely on the banks, they said. But hang on, central banks are central banks for a reason. They are supposed to sit, or perhaps even hide, behind commercial banks so that the commercial banks take all the risk, not them. But with the opening and widening of the foreign exchange swap lines, that means that central banks are now taking on foreign currency credit exposure, that is, the credit risk of other central banks due to currency mismatches. And the prospect of direct financing of corporates means that central banks are starting to take on genuine corporate credit risk. All in all, central bank balance sheets are becoming riskier to accommodate the de-risking of the private sector. The question is, what happens when everything blows up again? Can central banks literally go bust? Either they do, and then we worry about the integrity of the fiat currency system, or they don't, because they just print money to cover losses, effectively in collaboration with sovereigns, as they remit losses back to them, contributing to fiscal deficits, which in turn needs more central bank financing. Either way, we have to worry about the integrity of the fiat currency or inflation. Therefore, attention will start to turn to alternative currency regimes, whether it's gold or digital or some combination of those. In a press conference this morning, Prime Minister Scott Morrison upgraded the travel ban on Australians to level 4 for the entire world in the wake of the virus outbreak. This is the first time such a ban has been made in Australian history. A human biosecurity emergency has been declared under the Biosecurity Act by the Governor-General. The travel advice to every Australian is do not travel abroad. Do not go overseas. That is very clear. That is a very clear instruction, he said. But domestic air travel will not be cancelled, as it is, quote, low risk. And Morrison said that the country will not go down into lockdown during the virus pandemic, saying the situation will last for at least 6 months. But non-essential indoor gatherings of persons more than 100 have been banned. And the health advice is that schools should remain open, he said. However, to reduce the risk of transmission to aged care residents, visitors will be limited to a short duration and will only be allowed a maximum of 2 visitors at one time per day. And he criticised, quite rightly in my view, the panic buying chaos across the nation. Stop it, he said. It is not sensible, it is not helpful, and I have to say that it has been one of the most disappointing things that I have seen in Australian behaviour in response to the crisis, he said. And he flagged further economic measures will emerge soon, with the government considering further economic measures that will deal with the impact of the virus on the Australian economy, particularly on small businesses and individuals. And Westpac just released a revised economic outlook. Growth through 2020 is now estimated at 1.5%, with minus 1% in the first half, comprising 0.7% and 0.3% respectively in the March and June quarters, and 2.5% in the second half. This is recessionary territory. Just last week, they'd set the forecast peak unemployment rate of between 5.8% and 6%, up from the current 5.3% level. But now the unemployment rate, they say, is forecast to reach 7% by October 2020, up from the previous estimates, due to the larger negative shocks in the labour-intensive sectors, such as recreation, tourism, education, renovations and additions, and dwelling construction. This lift in the unemployment rate is despite reducing the participation rate from 66.1% to 65.4% as a discouraged worker effect, that is, As workers respond to a deteriorating labour market, the participation rate is likely to decline. And they added, please note that these forecasts are not based on Australia following a European-style full lockdown. Not surprisingly, the forecasts are subject to downward revision in the event of such an occurrence. Now, actually, this is quite consistent with our modelling, as we discussed on our live stream last night. There's a link above for that. Mortgage stress will rise in the months ahead as unemployment rises. But now the question becomes, to what extent will the banks forego mortgage repayments, and will they foreclose or not? And to what extent will the government support households directly? The mortgage debt mountain could bite deep and early. And it's also worth noting that we're already seeing a rise in financial stress among those renting. Here, the protections currently are very limited and will need to be increased. Our own modelling is based on the assumption that the crisis will run for at least 6 months, but overnight, a UK report suggested 18 months is more likely, given the lead time to a vaccination. And Macquarie said Australian stocks are already pricing in a global shutdown, but until day-on-day growth in the US virus cases peaks and starts to trend down, they suspect volatility will continue as markets price in scenario 3, a global pandemic and recession. But they say once we see the peak in daily growth in the US cases, it will be a positive sign that we may have passed the worst, and this should allow equity markets to form a bottom. If Australian corporate earnings per share were to fall 31%, as they did during the global financial crisis in the GFC, and investors were to demand an equity risk premium, the excess return over the 10-year government bond yield of 7.4%, the fair value price to earnings ratio for the ASX 200 would be 13.5 times, and the target price would be 3,700. Under this scenario, the ASX 200 could still fall a quarter from current levels. But then they said, we see an equal chance of a quick recovery where the index rises to 6,600 points, about 30% above Monday's close. And in the quick recovery scenario, they assume a 7% fall in EPS. Quickly on property, CoreLogic reported that Capital City sales are running 9.1% above last year's levels, driven by a massive increase in Sydney, up 20.7%. But we suspect that will soon be changing. And the Australian statistician announced on the 16th of March the commitment of the ABS to provide the community and government with additional up-to-date information on the economy in response to the virus. And they published preliminary retail turnover data, the first in a series of additional product releases over the coming months to help measure the economic impact of the virus. This release provides the preliminary estimate for Australian retail turnover for the month of February. This estimate will be subject to revision, with the final monthly estimate published on the 3rd of April. And they said that the Australian retail turnover rose 0.4% based on preliminary figures in February 2020, seasonally adjusted, according to the latest ABS statistics. The preliminary figures indicate a rise in food will be offset slightly by falls in industries such as clothing, footwear and personal accessories and other retailing, while some businesses, for example those rely on tourism, reported that the virus negatively impacted turnover. A range of other businesses saw limited impact only in February, and I suspect the food was to do with people stocking up. And finally, the Reserve Bank continues to run repos with another $8 billion yesterday on the back of that last week. These are large transactions and well above the normal course of business. And we're going to hear more from the Reserve Bank tomorrow about their future plans. So the ASX 200 closed down 6.43% to 4,953. The financials index fell down 7.64% to 4,232. And the ASX 200 REIT, which are the real estate trusts, fell 10.31% to 1,065. The local volatility index was up again another 12.12% to 5309. And the ASX 200 futures was down 7.9% to 4,859. Amongst the banks, the ANZ was down 8.29% to 16.92. CBA was down 2.92% to 65.68. The NAB was down 4.53% to 16.43. And Westpac was down 5.96% to 16.40. The Bank of Queensland was down 0.73% to 5.44. Bendigo and Adelaide Bank was down 3.44% to 6.18. Suncorp was down 9.39% to 8.78. And Macquarie was down 10.8% to 93.23. AMP was down 5.19% to 1.37. Lenders Mortgage Insurer Genworth was down 5.58% to 2.04. McGrath was down 9.52% to 19 cents. And the Ellerbrick Road was up 6.56% to 6.5 cents. Mortgage aggregator AFG was down 6.12% to 130. And Mortgage Choice was down 5.33% to 71 cents. The Aussie US dollar was down to 59.97. And that's down just a little from yesterday. The euro Aussie dollar was up 0.32% to 1.8380. The two-year bond was down 4.55% to 0.504, while the 10-year bond was up 4.59% to 1.220. The Aussie gold cross was up 3.06% to 2,524. And the Bitcoin Aussie Cross was up 1.36% to 8,835. And I have to say, we're going to continue to see huge amounts of volatility and uncertainty in the markets. And frankly, if this virus is going to take 6 months to work through, then I continue to think that we're going to see considerably more downside risk to the markets, to household finances and to companies. And whilst I think we will get further support from the Reserve Bank and from Treasury, I'm not sure that they can fix everything. And I come back to my fundamental point. I wonder what this is all doing fundamentally to the role of central banks and the role they should play going forward. I think when the dust has settled, there should be a fundamental rethink about what a central bank is, what its role is, and to whom it is accountable. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. My thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.